There are so many fabulous faraway places to see, such as Mexico, Sweden, Hawaii, Japan, and Capri. There's so many exciting and wonderful places.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
It isn't what Rome is, so why stay there when there are so many fabulous faraway places to see? Why should Spain and Tahiti?
Sonia Pressman Fuentes is with us. She's a feminist activist, a public speaker, an attorney, and was the first woman attorney in the office of the general counsel at the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission. She is the author of Eat First, You Don't Know What They're Going to Give You, The Adventures of an Immigrant Family and Their Feminist Daughter. And let us say, Sonia, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. What a ride it must have been for the last, I don't know how many years you've been after doing this stuff.
43.
I imagine the changes that you have seen in the culture, in the country, and in the world have been absolutely astronomical.
You're absolutely right. I think of it often.
Now, how do you keep up with that? When I say keep up with it, you go back 50 years, I can go back easy 50 years, and the world was different in those days. The culture was different. We thought about things differently. And then every 10 years or so, it changes again. How do you keep some kind of balance? How do you keep some kind of a base to help you maneuver through all of this?
Well, I am a computer addict, and when I wake up in the morning, 6 or 7, the computer goes on, and I don't really turn it off until 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And I read on the computer. I read the New York Times, the Washington Post, and I live in Sarasota, Florida. I read the Herald Tribune in Sarasota. And people know I'm a feminist, and I have a number of people that send me articles dealing with women's rights.
Sonia, what is a feminist?
A feminist is someone who believes in equal rights for men and women.
Okay, so it's equality of opportunity.
Correct.
Okay, and equality of opportunity, I think, is a very powerful thing, whether it's man, woman, green, blue, orange, black, white, whatever. And that's critical that we have that in the country today. What I've seen over the years, and it's something very interesting, they'll take something that like feminism, like this, like that, whatever, and they'll twist it into such a way that it loses that flavor, it loses that original oomph that it had and the reason that it came into existence.
So what are you asking me?
How do you keep it alive?
Well, we keep it alive. You don't have to keep it alive. It is alive because we have many problems and we have to deal with them.
Well, okay, well, wait, let's go back with this thing when you talk about feminism, all right? And by the way, I have to believe that feminism, the equality of opportunity, if that's feminism, I'm on board, sign me up, I'll do whatever. But if it's the subjugation of man to cause, to get you ahead, then obviously I'm on the other side of the table.
Well, of course it was never that. Who wants to subjugate men?
By the way, we can sit here and name names across the board. What I'm saying to you is, going back to the original question about how do you keep the original purpose, and how do you keep it alive and how do you keep it flowering without other people coming in and using it in such a way that it takes completely away from what you're trying to accomplish?
Well, I really haven't been that worried about people who are opposed to it. I do my thing with like-minded men and women.
Yeah.
And we've made tremendous progress just doing that. I'm not fighting other people. I'm not competing with other people. I am working with like-minded men and women to achieve progress.
Okay, now, and by the way, I'm on your side with this, but what is progress? Today, in today's world, if you walk down the street and you ask 10 people what progress was, you get probably 6 or 7 different answers, which I think that in and of itself is the problem that we have today. We don't have commonality in definition.
Well, you've never had that, and you don't expect it. We have like 300 million people in this country. You don't need them all to be lockstep with each other. Everybody is entitled to their own view.
But wouldn't you be okay? But wouldn't
thinking people could easily define for you the progress we've made since the mid '60s and '70s with regard to men and women.
Okay. Now, by the way, yes, there's been progress, but at the same time, when you deal with the rule of law, and you're an attorney, the rule of law as opposed to the rule of man, the Constitution that we have here in this country, shouldn't that in and of itself, that maybe the only place that we would walk lockstep with it?
clear what you're asking.
Okay, we have. You said we don't want to walk lockstep, right? Everybody has different views, but we also have a constitution and we have a set of rules and regulations and laws. And,
right.
And should not we all follow what the constitution and the rule of law says?
Of course, but it's not a black and white matter. That's why we need lawyers, because constitutions and laws are open to interpretation.
No, well, wait. Okay. Is law and constitution truly open to interpretation?
Absolutely. That's why we have courts and judges in the United States Supreme Court. Their job is to interpret the laws and the Constitution.
Okay, their job is to interpret, but not slanted from left, right, or indifferent. You got four on one side, four on the other side, and somebody in the middle there that's going to be the one to kick it over the edge if it goes one way. But should the laws be looked at through a political viewpoint, through political prism?
Because we're human beings. There's nobody that interprets a law that doesn't bring his or her whole life and personality to it.
Then
we all recognize that.
Okay, but then we need to throw out the rule of law and we sit with the rule of man, which means you interpret it the way you want to, and
no.
That's going to change geographically.
No. There's a halfway point between those two extremes. What you have is laws that need to be interpreted. You have judges, and if you have good judges, they are educated and they are intelligent and they are people of goodwill and compassion, and they will do the best they can to interpret those laws in the situations as they present themselves. And that's the best that we as human beings can do.
You know, one of the things that I have found over the years, and what I've thought for a long time now, it's probably over the last 20 years or so where I've really come to this conclusion for myself, is that in the very beginning, I didn't like Hillary Clinton. I'm going somewhere with this, so bear with me. I didn't like Hillary Clinton. I didn't like what she stood for. I didn't like the way she did what she did. But I always thought that if she became president, then, Sonia, she would become my president. And the moment that she became president, gender wouldn't be there anymore. It's like with Obama. He shouldn't be black. He shouldn't be white. He shouldn't be anything. That is a very powerful position. And the person has to transition into the position at that point. And I really believe that's very hard for somebody to do. But once you get into that kind of power, I think it does transcend gender, ethnicity, and many other things.
What are you asking me?
I'm asking you, I'm saying when you come to feminism, when you're coming to some of these things, and men and women working together, the point of position should be genderless. Men and women, it shouldn't really matter when you're going after a particular position, a particular ideology, a philosophy. It just really shouldn't matter. Men and women working together, you should be people working together towards the same goal.
Well, some of that I agree with, but if you're saying that if Hillary Clinton became president, she would no longer be a woman, I'm not going to agree with you.
Okay. When I say no longer, obviously she's always going to be a woman, but when she stepped into the position, if Condoleezza Rice would have ran and she would have stepped into the position, then it wouldn't matter what gender you are. You happen to be the most powerful person on the planet. And that's what I think we'd have to look at.
Well, that's true, but yeah. But you're saying gender wouldn't matter. It really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Makes a lot of sense to me.
Good. Yeah, I thought you were calling to ask my opinion.
I'm asking your opinion. Go ahead.
Okay. My opinion is that everything we as human beings do is filtered through the prism of our own lives, our own viewpoints, our own experiences, and there's no way to take that out of a person. You hope that the person will also act fairly and with justice and objectively. But to say that you take that out of it, that's not humanly possible.
No, it's not humanly possible. But where do we get our ideas and concepts and philosophies from everything that we hear? And I've been around the planet for quite a number of years now. And as a matter of fact, I was 8 years old when you graduated from college. How's that? And I've been around long enough, and I've watched enough things, and I've watched enough things change. And I'm almost at a point now where I'm a little embarrassed about why somebody votes anymore. We end up voting because somebody's going to give us something, and who's going to give us the most is the person we're going to put in. And that shapes opinion.
So I'm sorry, I'm not clear whether you're making a point.
Making a point.
Well, you're asking me my
viewpoint. That was a point, and then you can give me your viewpoint.
Well, it's kind of abstruse what you just said. If you could ask me something about my own views, I'd be
okay.
happy to.
All right. Okay. Your own viewpoint. With all of the messages that we get of what to believe and how to believe, how does a person really look through and make the kind of decision that's going to be right for everybody?
Well, that's a very difficult question. As I said before, we all do the best we can making decisions. In order to make a decision, you try to get the best education you can. You try to research it and find out the most you can about the issue involved. Hopefully, you have a sense of compassion, a sense of justice, and then you do the best you can.
Okay, and that makes a lot of sense. Now, let's go back. Let's go to the book for a moment, all right? What was it that stimulated you, that caused you to put these ideas to pen in the first place?
Oh, well, I started because I felt all along I was going to write a history of the EEOC and what I had done and others had done during the early years there, because I was at the EEOC during its first 8 years.
Hmm.
So my initial intention was to write a book about the early history of the EEOC, particularly with regard to women's rights. And one of the reasons I wanted to do that was that I already saw and spoke to men at the commission who had been terribly opposed to women's rights, who now that the tide had changed, were totally changing their point of view and not their point of view, but revising history by saying they were for it all along. So I said to a friend of mine, Mary Eastwood, also a founder of NOW, I said, Mary, we have to write down the history because these guys are coming around revising it. So that was the initial impetus for my writing a book. But that looked like awfully hard work to me. I had a basement full of files and papers and things, and I just didn't want to plow through all that myself. So I looked for a writer to work with me, and that didn't work out. And then I met with a woman editor and sought her advice and spoke with her a little bit. And she said to me, that's not the book you want to write. And I said, it's not. Mm. And she said, no. She says, you want to write a book about your life and your parents' lives, and you want to make it funny like the stories you've been telling me. That's the book you want to write. And she was right, and I went home and began to write my book, which took me 5.5 years.
Oh, by the way, 5.5 years, I'll bet any amount of money that in the process of writing the book, and going back and looking over your life, were there certain things that once you started to write about, they looked different to you, and certain things that came up that you didn't even realize were there, that were always in front of you, but you missed?
No.
No. Okay. Okay, well, you're going to be one in a million, and you are.
Because most of the stories I put in my book, or many of them,
yeah,
I've been telling all my life. I'm a storyteller.
Ah.
So I've been telling them all my life, and it was just a question of writing them down. So that, no, they were, and some of them I'd already written as stories, so I don't know that there were any surprises.
Okay, well, I mean, and by the way, you know, many, many writers, and I would say 99.9%, when you decide to put something to pen, the surprises are there. You start to get a look at life a little differently, and sometimes you look back and you say, oh my goodness, I didn't realize that. Anyway, we're starting to run out of time. Let me ask you this, Elena. I know Sonia. I looked at Elena Kagan on here. Sonia, is there a website we can find you at?
Absolutely. My website it's kind of peculiar, though. It's HTTP, www, everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Erratic, I'll spell it for you, ericimpact.com/Fuentes.
Love every second of that.
Erratic is ERRATIC, impact, IMPACT, ericimpact.com/my last name, FUENTES.
Wonderful. Sonia, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call, and the only heart I own for you and you alone. Oh, that's all. Oh, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime, and a hand to hold when leaves begin.